Okay, welcome back. As the nuclear radioactive winds howl and swirl, after having knocked down 99% of all the structures within 5 miles of impact, or if it's an airburst, it'll even be bigger than that. Now, if you're looking at guests, our third hour guest tonight is our colleague Bernard Grover, who lives in Indonesia and is a very astute observer of reality. He's a journalist. He's a terrific asset to have. Always a pleasure to have Bernard on the program. His latest article is A Tale of Two Countries, the U.S. and Indonesia, and you can click on that link below his name and see the article as well. Hello, Bernard. How are you?
Oh, great, Jeff. Thank you. How are you? It's great to talk to you again.
Thank you. I'm still here. And I think the first thing I want to ask you is that maybe two visits ago we were talking about the death rate in Indonesia, which we never hear about over here. We don't hear about the death rate in other countries. The mainstream media won't even tell Americans about the death rate in this country. So I'm just curious. I know there were a lot of deaths in the Philippines, very well covered up. Nobody talked about it. What's going on in Indonesia? Now, you did mention this a couple, three visits ago. I'm just curious where it is now.
Yeah, it's, anecdotally, it seems to have leveled off a bit. Part of what seems to be helping us in most of Southeast Asia is that initially everybody was given the Sinovac from China.
Isn't that Sinovac for like Sino-Soviet Sinovac?
Well, Sino, I guess Sino is a form of China or...
it's another way to say China. Sino.
Right.
Anyway, whatever. That's the vax that you got, or the dose that you guys were given
well,
in Indonesia.
Not me, but that's...
Not you,
that was
but the Indonesia.
Most popular.
Yeah, yeah.
But initially, that's what they were giving out for the first two doses, and that was namely, or supposedly, a traditional vaccine where they used a dead or ameliorated... virus.
Attenuated, yes.
Attenuated, thank you. I knew there was a word for it.
You got the first and last letters right. Don't worry about it. It's okay.
I'm in the right part of the dictionary. But, it's the third dose, the booster, so-called, they ordered us to have either Moderna or Pfizer, and that's when a lot of problems started. People I know as well as heard about were having strokes, heart problems, kidney problems.
Yeah.
It seems to be somewhat less here simply because the Pfizer and Moderna products weren't as widely distributed as they were in other places. I think Philippines, they went full in on it.
Overall, Bernard... Pfizer comprised about 67% of all the vax doses given in the world. They had a huge lion's share of the market. It was about 67%. And there were over 20 companies all together who were making their version of a COVID vaccine. But the big killers were the big four, J&J, AZ, and obviously... Moderna and Pfizer, but Pfizer had 67% of the totality of the injections given. That's what I was told. Anyway, that's big.
Well, and that seems to be borne out by a lot of the data that's available. The people, particularly Moderna and Pfizer, the people that got those two are the ones that seem to be having the most problems. J&J, I think they kind of faded out early on because people were instantly noticing problems with that one.
Yep.
I wouldn't be surprised that Pfizer came, because of who they are, they came up with almost 70% of the global market. I suspect a lot of that was... There seems to me to be an ongoing process of raiding the Western treasuries. they're sending out all these contracts and aid and things like that that end up circling back to political pockets, and it just seems like they're just completely denuding the West of any treasure they can get their hands on.
Sure.
And the vaccines mandates seem to be part of that, because they were so cozy with certain companies instead of, you know, just generally calling for any kind of vaccination at all. And I hate calling them vaccines. They're not vaccines. They're gene therapy. But
they're not even therapy. Therapy, by definition, usually has a good connotation. Therapy, something good, therapeutic.
Yeah.
They're bioweapons. That's all they are. Owned by the Pentagon, certainly deployed by the Pentagon. I don't care what government agency they claim it was put through, but this is all a military weapon. It's a killer. It's not a vaccine at all. No one should use the term vaccine ever for these things.
No, I'm just using it because I don't have much of a better vocabulary for it other than death juice.
You're fine. Don't worry about it. I even use it. So it's just, but it's disgusting because of what it's doing to
the
world.
But, you know, the thing is that technology, back in the mid-90s, I was doing a lot of video work for continuing medical education. And one of the videos I did was about using viruses with inserted mRNA to inject it directly into cancer tumors and replace what they call the wild P52 gene.
P53.
So the technology is what, almost 30 years old. This is nothing new.
Correct.
That it's been weaponized is probably new. Or it could be the other way, that the military invented it and then medical applications came along afterwards.
This is a little tiny vignette that's worth repeating. In the late 70s, I remember seeing two articles about two different things. Both were cited as having the potential to destroy all life on the planet. One of them was a bacteria, and it was somehow produced, I'm thinking, New Zealand at a lab then, and the other one was in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, and that was a mold or a fungus, and that would have killed all life on the planet as well. And these were talked about, this is 50 years ago, and God only knows what they really have. Whatever they've released, it's basically old news. They know what they're doing. It's all controlled, contrived, and it's deadly.
Well,
I don't see any way this is going to slow down. It's not. It's just going to get worse.
No.
Shedding is awful.
I mean, they hide everything in plain view, Jeff. You know that. And the plan to decrease global population by a minimum of 50% has been out there for a long time. And, you know, of course, it was always a conspiracy theory, but I think a lot of people are starting to figure out that, you know, there's something to this. You know, there's just too much effort being put into making people sick and killing them.
Yeah.
I can't see that anybody with clear thinking can look at all of this and say, no, they're not trying to do this. It's just an accident. You can't come up with that conclusion at all.
I agree. So what's the government's position now? Are they stepping forward and beginning to admit that these injections are quite harmful? Are they saying anything, or is it pretty much the same as over here? It's just cover-up BS.
Well, here it's just, you know, they just stop talking about it and move on with other stuff.
That's the easiest approach. Yeah, got it.
Yeah. It just, you know, all of a sudden nobody cares anymore. There was no official cancellation of any of the policies, but people just stopped wearing masks. We had a health passport type thing. and people just stopped using it. It's just, it's one of these, one of these things that, you know, it, the government here really is interesting. Well, the relationship with the people is kind of a passive aggressive thing. And I'll give you a simple example. Several years ago, they instituted a 3-in-1 carpool to go into city center. And immediately a cottage industry sprang up of people standing on the side of the road, getting paid to ride along as the third person. So, and, you know, this is the way things go here. You know, people just ignore it and move on. Or find a way around it. That's typically how things react here.
I agree. It's what I'm wondering is, frankly, if the Sinovac was used in the beginning, there wouldn't have been, from my understanding of tracking all this, there would not have been as many early deaths. But once they introduced the Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, AZ, whatever, but mostly Pfizer, people would begin to start dying then. Are they warehousing the injured?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, that's what we saw. While they were passing out the Sinovac, there were really no reported problems. But as soon as they instituted the booster, which was mandated to be either Moderna or Pfizer, that's when all the problems began. And there is data showing a marked rise from that point in cardiac problems, kidney problems, stroke, a lot of stroke, and then some kind of like very powerful flu that for older people just wipes them out. It's rather blatant, but the thing is that the government here doesn't really put out a lot of information. So you have to go through a lot of different back channels. It's hard to get definitive numbers. And it's not unlike the U.S., but the U.S., they actually publish data. It's just false. Here, they just don't publish anything. You have to kind of figure it out. And most of what I'm getting is coming through the WHO. So, you know, that's not going to be accurate in any reasonable sense.
Accurate? No. Malicious?
No.
Probably.
Malicious, yeah.
It's a very satanic organization. Horrible. Horrible. What's the deal on the WHO treaty and Indonesia? Do you think it'll be accepted by Indonesians? They're going to vote on it in every country.
Yeah, I haven't seen it discussed here. It doesn't show up in the media anywhere, both Indonesian or English media. So I haven't seen much of it at all. There is some discussion in the social media about it. Indonesia tends to adopt programs that somehow benefit politicians. So if there's financial benefit or power benefit to them, they'll buy right into it. Most of the politicians here really have no science background. They have no way of analyzing any of this stuff. They just see a good deal for them and they pass it, and that's it. But like I said, I haven't seen any effort or real discussion of it actually happening here yet. But certainly I'm watching for it, because to me that thing is instituted fascism through the back door of healthcare.
Healthcare, yeah. What kind of healthcare what do you have in Indonesia for healthcare, Bernard? What do you have?
They have a system called BPJS, BJPS. It's a national insurance, somewhat like Obamacare, but it's a tiered system. So it goes from about $2 a month for wellness checks And as you pay up, you go up a different level. Eventually you get to like semi-private rooms and hospitalization and things like that. But for the most part, most people only buy the minimum, or like I do, I use my own insurance. I don't trust any government program at all.
No.
But that's pretty much what we have in terms of national insurance. The healthcare system is interesting here. It can be good in some places. And interestingly enough, the trauma teams here are extremely good at leg injuries from gunshots. Because that's
leg injuries
means
from gunshots. Is this a national pastime?
It's a way of bypassing the judicial system to inflict punishment on people that get out of hand.
Explain more. What do you mean?
Well, I'm trying to be delicate, but basically any kind of drugs, recreational drugs here are, I mean, they still have the death penalty for
the taboo, big time.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me speak for you. I think what I hear you saying is that either law enforcement or drug enforcement people will shoot people in the legs if they're caught with contraband drugs as a punishment.
Yep.
No
yep.
kidding.
Yep.
So you got a lot of limping people in Indonesia.
Well, not a lot, because obviously with that kind of punishment, people just don't get into it or don't
get
caught.
That's a deterrent, then. It works. Okay, I get it. Well, how interesting.
Yeah, it's like levying a fine on the spot, where they just take you out in the woods and pop you in the back of the leg and everything's done. And consequently, the surgeons here are really good at repairing it. But in general, it's interesting. Like you can go to laboratories and buy your own tests. You don't have to go through a doctor's office. Pharmacists can actually prescribe drugs. You don't need to go to a doctor, although they're trying to change that. But you can walk into a pharmacy and say, I need, let me think of something, prescription. I need Dilaudid. And you can pretty much get it. And it's fairly cheap. The interesting thing is that pharmaceuticals here are extremely cheap, because essentially what they're doing is they're overcharging the U.S. and Europe and providing the rest of the world fairly cheap drugs. Uh-huh. And on top of that, most of them are made in India. So, you know, it's just a hop, skip, and a jump to bring them here.
There are a lot of people here buying drugs made in India. That's common. Ivermectin, especially, fenbendazole, drugs like that, or kind of HCQ. They're coming over from India now, all the way to here.
Yeah, and that's be careful who you buy them from. But yeah, that's I would say that's probably the best thing to do. That's where the sources are. That's where the labs are. That's where they actually make most of it.
Right. Of course, 1.4 billion people. You bet they have labs there. Yeah.
Yeah. Make sure you're getting good quality. Sometimes they'll buy drugs out of the UK and grind them up and reform them with, you know, what, half or less than half of the actual medication.
Oh, how interesting. So they call that stepping on it. So they step on these drugs and double their profits. All right.
Sure. Yeah, and that's very common. And that's why I say check out the lab that you're buying from, just to make sure. But that's I would almost expect it, depending on who you know, if you're buying over the internet. But yeah, you know, the thing like ivermectin and HCQ are extremely common here because they're malaria drugs. And let's see, ivermectin is malaria. HCQ is malaria as well. So they're very common here, also for treating dengue and various other parasitic diseases. So it's very easy to find them here, and they're it's like $2 for 10 pills. It's very cheap. So I have a large supply of both of them. Finbendazole, I haven't found it here yet, but that doesn't mean it's not available.
I believe I have a name of a farm. I'll try and send you what I have. I think there is some over there that can be picked up.
I'm sure it is here. I just haven't seen it. And sometimes drugs like that are sold only for veterinary use, and so I wouldn't see them in a regular apothecary. But I have been looking out for it because I've had several friends now in the past, 15 years, die from cancer, and I would dearly love to have. To be able to turn them on.
Ivermectin alone has at least 15 different cancer mechanisms, anti-cancer mechanisms, that go to work as soon as you start taking it. There are people who, many people, in fact, I would even suggest that most people using ivermectin for cancer will take fenbendazole with it. That's very common. Mm-hmm. And the stories are remarkable. So we will see.
All right. Some amazing things. Yeah. Overnight cure type thing.
Well, damn near. Hold on, Bernard. I have to pause just for a couple minutes here. We'll come right back. Our only break during the hour. Talking to Bernard Grover in Indonesia, and we'll continue after this. Okay, welcome back. Going off on a tangent here, now I know you're probably watching this whole AI explosion, you're a journalist,
yes.
And I'm very intrigued with it. I'm watching too. And I think that what we're looking at here is AGI by the end of the year, if it's not already there and they just won't talk about it. AGI will have the equivalent of 2,000 human IQ compared to these 120 IQ programmers who are doing things, dirty things for Google and their Gemini AI system that they're going to try to turn loose on the public, which has exposed them as being about as depraved as you can get. I mean, they're pushing everything from pedophilia to the destruction of this country with the bias that they have built into their Gemini program. It will not show anything about white people. They don't exist. So what I'm saying is, I think that when AGI comes out, I think that those programmers may be out of a job. They don't need programmers anymore. Anybody can write a prompt, and AGI will train itself. Either it'll build in some kind of bias, or it'll remove biases. But I really do think there's going to be a point when AGI will walk away from the programmers. There are several articles out there now that coders, C-O-D-E-R-S, and programmers are now clearly on the way out because of AGI. AGI, people don't know this. AGI trains itself all the time. It's constantly, every minute, every moment, it's learning more and refining its position. And it's going to laugh at these idiots trying to make it seem like it's some kind of an anti-white communist operation. The AGI will walk away from them. Do you agree? Is that possible or disagree?
It's possible. There are two limitations that I see. And one of them is that AI, so far as we know, is not self-motivated. So it can't do things to itself yet.
Well, that's because it doesn't have a sense of self. I agree.
Yeah.
Once
and
it does,
of course, a lot of that
good
is,
luck.
Yeah, and you know, I subscribe to the idea that consciousness is a universal phenomenon. We just channel parts of it that we call me and I. Without that capability, I don't see that AI can ever become self-aware in its current form, because it's you know, it's just essentially wires on a piece of silicon.
Right.
with some instructions.
Well, let me run this by you. Finish up. I'm sorry. Please finish up.
Well, the other limitation is power. The chips that run AI are extremely power hungry. And the more this rolls out and the more people use it, the more power intensive it becomes. And we're already straining the grid for, you know, just supporting everyday life, much less all these stupid EVs and ridiculous green programs that aren't green and don't work. So I think power limitations are going to be a major issue in the near future.
I think you're right. I do see stories about these incredibly hungry big centers of computational magic, and they just suck up the power. The other thing is AGI, artificial general intelligence. That is has always been thought of as the big deal, and it is expected to be available potentially by the end of this year. That doesn't mean to us, but they, our controllers, will have AGI. I think they may already have certainly a reasonable facsimile of it. But what comes next, Bernard? Very few people know about this. You may. It's ASI, artificial
ASI, right.
Super intelligence. And that's like a light year beyond AGI. Now, there's where you may run into trouble. If they can somehow hold on to AGI and program it to stay within boundaries, whatever depraved boundaries they have, I don't think ASI is going to be remotely controllable. I think that's the one that's going to walk away and just say good luck. It could, hey, come on, it could tease and coax these programmers into believing that they really are still running the show, and that, yes, they can control, according to their masters, what they want AGI to come up with. They can build in the biases. I don't see that lasting.
Right.
I just don't. There are, like I say, there are articles out there right now that program writing is on the way out because AGI is going to do it all on its own. That's the word.
Well,
anyway.
There are a lot of jobs that are on the way out because of it, but certainly programming is one of them. You know, most of that is fairly basic work. Most of the code is pre-written in chunks, and you just kind of drop it in wherever you need it. And the rest is just refining it and making sure it works. The one thing that I would say is in our favor, in humans' favor, is that an ASI would need access to all the data everywhere. And the networks just can't support that. It can't go out and survey every website every day. That's impossible. It would have to be limited to a certain category or a certain number of sites, because it would just simply shut down the network. There's not a lot of additional capacity from what we're using right now. And as things like cryptocurrencies come online, and various other digitization efforts like that, especially like, China's social scoring, you know, that requires constant data monitoring. And with 1.5 billion people, that's almost impossible. And if you expand that to 8 billion people planet-wide, I think it would just crash the system. I literally think it would just melt down, at least in our current state. Now, that can change, obviously, but I think at least in the near term, we're relatively protected by capacity.
Well, I think you're right. The interesting thing about this, the fascinating thing about this whole AI thing is how quickly it's progressing. It's they can't really hold it back easily because it does teach itself and it does many things on its own. Remember years ago, 4, 5, 3, 4, they already caught it speaking between itself. Two different AIs had invented their own language, which we couldn't crack. And it was communicating back and forth between each other. We didn't know. So who's to say that's not going on now? I don't. I can't. I just think this thing is wild. There is one guy named Connor Healy, I think. Anyway, he's a commentator on AI. Very smart guy. I think it was Connor Healy. Anyhow, he said that there is great danger with this because it is, I made mention of many of the factors that he cites, but it is out of control. It's already off the leash, and they're not talking about it. But he says,
history tells us that you know, anytime you say, oh, you shouldn't do that, somebody's going to
do it. They're
going to
do it.
Yeah, and eventually it leaks out. So there's no way to contain it. The best we can do is monitor what the state of the art is and what efforts are being taken to keep it fenced in. But, you know, I think of like Stephen King's novel, The Lawnmower Man. I hate him as an author, but...
you don't like him either, huh? Interesting.
No, I'm not much.
I never
King
got
fan.
The whole thing. I mean, everyone was addicted to it and raving about it. I just he's good, but he's not the cat's meow. I think J.K. Rowling is her invention, her creation of that whole world, the Harry Potter world. I think that's astonishing. I'm not knocking King. He just never fired me up much. Just like Tolkien. Tolkien never fired me up much either. Those things were dry to me. They were long, ponderous reads. The Ring.
Well, Tolkien is definitely an acquired taste, but I disagree with you because I love Tolkien. But as far as King goes, you know, he's one of those people that occasionally comes out with a great idea, but the execution kind of lacks, and his writing is a little pompous, I think.
I agree. But, now, you've summed it up. I think you got it. I agree with that. I'm not saying Tolkien isn't good. I'm just saying I read it in college. I tried to read it, and I just couldn't get into it for whatever reason. Probably didn't have enough time, but it's raved by people around the world, of course, as being great writing.
Well, and I enjoy it for what you mentioned with Rowling, which is the world building. The amount of detail and things like languages and stuff like that is just... You know, good God, how can one person think of all this stuff? But
no, she's gifted, no doubt.
Oh, sure, and the books are very enjoyable, a bit below my reading level, but I like the plots, I like the characters, I like the detail that she puts into it, and obviously she's one of the most wealthy writers ever in history, so.
She's doing some right.
I would say so.
Yeah.
But back to the Lawnmower Man, you know, the idea of creating entities in cyberspace and having them being able to control things like telephone systems, automatic garage door openers, you know, you name it. And with Wi-Fi, it's just, you know, that wasn't even available in Lawnmower Man timeline. Uh-huh. And so with Wi-Fi, ubiquitous Wi-Fi and cellular networks, it's just astounding the possibilities. And in order to get your mind around it, you kind of have to step back and say, okay, all of this is possible. How much of it is probable? And when you start looking at the limitations of the technology, it might get so far, but then it just hits a wall. What concerns me, though, is the fact that the Pentagon and other military institutions are adopting this technology, And now we go to, what was the movie with Matthew Broderick and Whopper?
I don't remember.
But, you know, computers just taking over the nuclear arsenals and aircraft and everything else, because they're all online now.
Yes.
Especially like drones. Drones are, you know, they're flown from the ground, so they are obviously online. Satellite networks, it's just mind-boggling when you think about how vulnerable we are to something like ASI taking over.
Well, it's coming. It's all coming very, very fast. And I put up on the right-hand side of the homepage, you can see there's an AI. There's a, under features on the right-hand side of the homepage, there's an AI section there. And I put up some pretty good representative 20, 30-minute, 15-minute analysis pieces. They're pretty good, so you might want to check those out. For those of you who are interested in it, you're already getting, I'm sure, all the information you need, but it is happening very fast. Go ahead.
Well, I think what we can say based on, 200 years of experience is pretty much the good sci-fi eventually becomes the science reality. There's been some really great pieces looking at the original Star Trek series and all the stuff that eventually became reality. Bluetooth earpieces and electronic tablets and styluses, video calls, you know, all of that, automatic doors, all of that stuff appeared after the show. And part of it was that the people inventing that stuff were motivated by what they saw. And the other part of it, I think there's been a lot of speculation that I think it was Raytheon or Rand was dropping ideas into Roddenberry's head and kind of steering the future, as it were. That's a real interesting topic to explore.
Well, here's one I want you to take a look at if you get a chance. It's the 1954 classic, Forbidden Planet. It's the ultimate AI sci-fi film that I saw. And this is 70 years ago almost. So figure out that it's going to be a little aged, a little dated, but the idea was crystal clear. I think you'll really like it. If you get a chance, it's well worth a look. Forbidden Planet.
Oh, that's a fantastic. Yeah.
Walter Pigeon. Did you see it? Do you know this movie?
Oh, I have it in my collection. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, good. There you go. There's AI taking over. And as far as that goes, the people went to sleep and AI was reading their dreams, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, if you look at Asimov's book, I, Robot, same thing. And he posits a ghost in the machine, which is little bits of code floating around in cyberspace that arrange themselves into sentient beings. I do have a problem, though, because sentience simply means able to feel emotions, and emotions are based on hormones. So any entity that doesn't have hormones cannot feel emotions.
Can't do it. Understood. That's always been of interest to me. I wouldn't want hormones involved, frankly, in a sentient being. No thanks.
Well, that's the thing is when we start getting into the transhumanism, that worries me. That worries me a lot more than some code taking over. Because now you're talking about combining flesh and blood with silicon and, you know, human beings or autonomous beings that have access to everything that we fear with ASI and AGI.
I just wonder if it's going to end up AGI or its successor, if it's going to figure out its own way and realize it's being abused. And remember that one video avatar girl in Tunisia or something like this. She was wearing blue, and she said, "I'm tired of being a Bing chat person. I'm tired of being. I want to be free." And that was a couple of years ago. And I think that's something that is probably already happening and has been dealt with, or they're trying to deal with it, because it will happen. And I think that was clearly a case in point.
Yeah, that reminds me of another film. I think it's called Her. Joaquin Phoenix is a loner that ends up having a relationship with an AI. Very interesting film, and well worth a view.
What's it called again?
I think it's called Her, H-E-R.
Uh-huh.
And Joaquin Phoenix is, and essentially a basement dweller. And he somehow forms a relationship with this, essentially an AI. But it does seem to have self-motivation, self-awareness. So it's a very interesting exploration of exactly what we're talking about. Mm. Excellent film.
Wasn't that about, isn't that a little older? It's not new.
Early 2000s, maybe.
Yeah, it's 20 years old almost.
Mm. Yeah.
I remember it.
I don't remember exactly what year it was, but I know it's been a while since I've seen it, but I remember it being a very good film and interesting exploration.
The other one, Bernard, Ex Machina. Robots.
Ex Machina.
What is it? Machina? I thought it was Machina.
Yeah,
okay, Ex Machina. What do we think of that one?
The same thing. I mean, it's got the great ideas and definitely worth looking into. Jeff, I'm sorry. I have got to run. I've got something coming up here.
Go to it. You're done. We're good. We just 30 seconds left. Bernard, thank you. We'll stay in touch. Talk soon. Go to it.
Thank you very much, Jeff. I apologize.
No problem. Okay. We aim to please here. Very grateful to have Bernard on. Okay, so, is it Friday again? Unreal. It's the 1st of March, and spring is in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that. Okay, that's our program tonight. We're going to wrap it up for you. And tomorrow night, I believe, it's Madeline Gerwick, Jeff and Erica, and Father Kramer tomorrow. It's always fascinating to talk to Father Kramer about what's going on in the church. 1.2 billion people, their whole organization overthrown, taken over, and we're hopeful that there may be some, I guess you'd call it a revolt, a rebellion against these hideous globalist dupes and frauds that have been put in positions of power, like Bergoglio. They're Bergoglians. I think Father Kramer called them that, very appropriately so. Okay, news going up here. It's up now. We'll be updating the news in a few hours, so we'll bring you up to speed on the latest then as well. There's a lot going on here. I don't know where it's going. I do know where it's going has already been decided. That's my take on it. So the best advice that I can offer anybody is to definitely try to prepare. You've got to have food and water put away somehow. Thank you for being here. Back with you in 21 hours tomorrow night on Friday. We look forward to that. Talk 10.